All right, 2 Corinthians chapter 11 is where we are at. I want you to turn there if you're willing. There's a Bible in front of you, probably on your phone. Get after it. So let me tell you something. There's a lot that's changed in my lifetime, and one of them is a whole shift in thinking about some really important topics. And when I was little, this was not true. I am born and raised in San Jose, and I still live here. And what was true growing up is no longer true for a lot of people. And here's what it is. It has to do with this. In really big ways, not in the nuanced ways, because there's nuanced ways that both of these might be true, but I put the word only in here on purpose. And that is that there's right and wrong, or there's only opinions. If your opinion is that there are only opinions, we can't also have definitive right and wrong. There are winners and losers, or only participants. And there is truth, or only opinions. You tracking with me? Now, there can be opinions and truth about something, right? Someone could sing the national anthem and change keys 4 different times, and you could say the true statement that that wasn't sung the way it was written. That's a true statement. You could also say, I love that rendition of the Star Spangled Banner. Great. Good for you. But in really big ways and in big things, either one of these has to be true and can't coincide with the other. Here's what's interesting. People are trying to figure this out. They are exhausting themselves, trying to get a handle on things like winners and losers, participants, truth, opinions. And we just sang this lyric, God, I look to you, I won't be overwhelmed. Exhausting yourself on these kinds of ideas is really, really foolish. God has gifted us something called truth, and he's taken kindness to show it to us, most clearly in the person of Jesus Christ, and he's written it down in the scriptures. Other people in history knew the answers to what's on the screen right now. They didn't exhaust themselves on this. They exhausted themselves on other stuff, but not on this. This was gifted to them, and they received the gift. Part of the penalty of questioning everything and dismantling everything is you find yourself exhausting yourself over things that are actually plainly evident if you can pay attention to this. Now, I am not against all participation ribbons. If you have a participation ribbon, I'm okay with that. But if you own a participation trophy, can we just say, like, that is like exhibit A through Z of what I'm talking about right here. It seemed like a good idea at the time, but maybe that participation trophy needs to be dismantled, not the idea of winners and losers. All right. This poison, this idea of only opinions, only participants, only ideas, when that seeps into the church, when that seeps into marriage and family, when that seeps into job and calling and selfhood, it is absolutely ruinous to that entity. And we have a dumb culture that has let these things come in. Let me show you a conversation initiated by Jesus to his disciples. This is in Matthew 16. If you want to jot that down and test me on it later, you can see it. But let me just show you. He asks this. It's a really familiar passage. And he's talking to his disciples. And he's just basically getting a read on things. And he says, who do people say that I am? Remember this? So Jesus initiates this conversation for learning. And what's offered back to him are what? Differing opinions. Some say this, some say that, some say this. Then Jesus makes it very pointed, says, who do you say that I am? Peter, shocker, speaks up and makes a declarative statement. You are the Christ, the Son of the living God. Here's the lesson I want to show you. Peter spoke truth, the others had it wrong, and Jesus authoritatively declared, correct, Peter, incorrect, all the other opinions. He wasn't ashamed of that. He was gifting that to his disciples. So the truth, winners and losers, and what was the third thing? Right and wrong, morality. Those are gifts to us. They are gifts, so we don't have to be overwhelmed trying to figure out what God has already solved. Here is the giant idea this morning, that real life ministry is true and requires discernment. Real life ministry is true and requires discernment. If you don't discern the truth, you get duped, which here in this case means tricked, scammed, hoodwinked, whatever other word you want to put in there. We have a couple of new games in the Carlson family game night rotation now. And we have to be careful about the terms we use in proper settings because, for instance, Tate was Hitler in this game recently. There is a game called Secret Hitler, and we're like, oh, remember that time you were Hitler? And if we're just at in and out saying that, it could come off as a little bit odd. We might have family services called on us, I'm not sure. But Secret Hitler and another game called Imposter. Have you heard of these games? Okay. All right. Imposter and Secret Hitler. Actually, super fun games. I am questioning the wisdom of teaching my family these games. Here's why. I am either training their discernment and their ability to not get duped, or I'm training them to be really deceptive. It's kind of two sides of the same coin. So these two games are happening right now. We're in this series called Real Life Ministry. And I said this at the very beginning, that real, like real life even, real life has to be more carefully looked at than ever before. Because of bots and AI and all kinds of things, we all have an extra couple of layers of like, well, is that true? Is that cat really juggling on a unicycle? I've never seen a cat do that before. Are there really unicorns coming out of that person's nostrils? I mean, like, we are looking at these and we have to do it. It requires discernment to see if something is real life. But far more impactful is this. Is this really the life, God, that you offer and promise to me? I feel down in the dumps. People are against me. I'm not winning the way that I think I should be or that others have told me I can or whatever else. What is real life? You just sang an incredible song. I am the way, the truth, and the life, Jesus says. We have to know what that is. But the real here in this title is also describing ministry. As in the ministry that I'm involved in, whether it be a member of Neighborhood Bible Church or going through the Colson Fellows and entrusting 9 months of my time and some money and a lot of investment. Are my leaders, are they ministering in a way that's true, that's real, that is aligned with how God wants it to be done or not? Second question, if you're a Christian, you're a minister. Am I ministering in a way that's true? Is this the way ministry ought to be done? Husband to wife, child to parent, neighbor to neighbor, worker to employee, all these different relationships that we have. And by the way, I just intentionally used the word serve and minister interchangeably because that's what it means. So today is really training for you ministers. And by ministers, I simply mean Christians. And the lesson is this, learn to discern. So where's Paul coming from? 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 1. Here he is like Pastor Dad Paul, okay? And he basically pictures himself as the father of the bride. This is already a familiar motif in Scripture. We read about this elsewhere, where the bride is who? The church. And the groom that's coming for his bride is who? Jesus. Yeah, so Jesus is the groom. The church, the people of God, are the bride. That's the picture that he's painting, okay? 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 1 says this. I wish you would bear with me a little foolishness. Do bear with me, for I feel a divine jealousy for you since I betrothed you to one husband, Jesus, to present you, church, as a pure virgin to Christ. But I'm afraid that as the serpent deceived Eve by his cunning, your thoughts will be led astray from a sincere and pure devotion to Christ. Here's what's really interesting. You could look at this passage and go, Paul is jealous and afraid. Is that the kind of minister you want? Context is everything. He just said, I'm jealous and afraid. But you got to read the context. Don't misquote what Paul is saying here. If God has entrusted you daughters, let me just say, you ought to thank God every single day. It's one of the greatest of all gifts. And what's amazing is a daughter just got lifted out of her stroller in the back this second. Congratulations. If God has gifted you a daughter, that's just an incredibly precious thing. And you ought to not only thank him every day, but pray to him every single day, as long as she's alive. Even if she's grown and out of the house, pray for your daughters. If you have daughters, you too will be jealous and afraid in the godly sort of way that Paul is talking about. Here is my oldest daughter, Briley. She was a flower girl in a wedding a long time ago. And this little child is unimaginably valuable to me. And she has a lot of needs. I'm not sure exactly how old she is. I didn't go back and do the math, but she's pretty young. Briley here is vulnerable in all kinds of different ways that she would have no clue how to protect herself. And God has called me as dad to provide and protect and lead her. Here's the great news as a dad. If God has gifted me this child, he has equipped me for the task at hand. So every day I can wake up and say, thank you, God, for this precious gift. I don't own her. She's yours, but I get to be an influence over her. I will protect and provide and lead her. Years later, I walked an aisle and I gave this same little girl away. Now, there is tons of behind the scenes tending and toiling that goes on in private to lead to an incredibly public, beautiful moment. Remember the idea of planting in one season and harvesting in another season? This day is the day my wife and I have prayed about, thought about, planned for, worked for the life of my daughter. And guess what? It was exceedingly hard. And it was exceedingly joyful. And it was just all of that sort of mashed up together. Now, giving away the bride has fallen under fire. And it's because there's a complete confusion about what marriage is. And this is no shock. Remember the dumb ideas that have seeped into culture? This is no shock because many people, even in leadership, cannot have an intelligible discussion about what man and womanhood is about. So it would stand to reason they would have no idea how to have a discussion about what marriage is about. So giving away a bride from a flawed and broken idea of what marriage even is, I love that what you said about a job, right? If we don't know the intended purpose, we'll mess it up every time. Here's a warning to all of us with kids in public school. Because of gender studies programs, this is only going to get worse and not better. And if your kids go to Christian college, look carefully about what's being taught. Because this is seeping in to almost every Christian institution that I know of. Utter confusion. But here's the reality. Authority is a gift from God. Fathers, you are charged with being the family priest. You have authority over your family to serve in a servant leadership the way that Jesus said to do. So take the responsibility to care and for the well-being and the protection and thriving of your family. When a dad is giving away his daughter, he's not giving her away like he owns her. He's giving away this covering of provision. And he is signifying, this is why I literally walked over and handed the hand of my daughter to Hector, her husband. You know, it's a joyful thing. God answered the prayer that I joyfully handed the hand of my daughter to a man that I trusted. And I was saying, now the authority is yours, husband. Use it well. As husband, you have authority in the home. As pastor, Paul has authority in the church. There's no apology. And think about this. There's nothing but good to tap into here if we do it God's way. Let me show you a verse that we covered maybe 2 weeks ago, 2 Corinthians 10:8. He says, for even if I boast a little bit too much about our authority, he's having to come exert his authority with his church. Because they're about to be the runaway bride. It's going to like take off at the altar. He's like, no, wait a minute. We've done all this stuff. He says, let me talk about my authority. He says, which the Lord gave for building you up and not destroying you. I will not be ashamed. If God has entrusted you authority and you know what it's for the building up of others, to do it in a Jesus way, which is getting low and serving and lifting from the bottom, do not be ashamed of that. Only harm will come when you fight against the established order of God. So Paul, the father of the bride, fulfilling his role to lead with all diligence, has some really strong words for this church. Some potentially conflict-raising words. And he's doing this, why? Because he loves them. And sometimes love demands that you speak up, that you act, that you step into an area you feel ill-equipped to fulfill, but it's because you lead them. If you're taking notes, I'm going to have you write three things and then three things at the end. Okay, so three things first. Here they are. I'll just give them to you up front. Discern or be duped in these three areas. These are like really hard-hitting areas that like are really applicable to us today. I'm going to show you in the text. So first, discern or be duped by truth. Verse 4, Paul says this, for if someone comes and proclaims another Jesus than the one we proclaimed, another Jesus, or if you received a different spirit from the one you received, or if you accept a different gospel from the one you accepted, you put up with it readily enough. Three differences are introduced here. A different Jesus, a different spirit, a different gospel. Now, first things first, let's talk about truth. Tuesday nights, we have some parents coming here saying, I really want to pass on the faith to my teens and I want some help. And they wisely are humbling themselves and steering their week to say, I'm going to invest in this. This is called Summer Theologians. And one of our tracks is passing on the faith to the next generation. Here's what we learned about a couple of weeks ago. The idea that we could talk about Christianity in four words. And here's what this guy says. I love this. He says, start with truth, move on to God, then talk about Jesus, and then talk about the Bible. If you want more info on that, go to Dana. Dana takes really good notes, and she was there that night. Plus, it'll help it drive into Dana's heart. But we start with truth. Why? Because if there is no truth, it's all just opinion, and what Chuck says or what anyone says doesn't matter. It's just your opinion. This is why I started with truth or only opinions. But in fact, there is truth. And I would challenge all of you atheists, all of you agnostics, you don't actually live the way that you say you do by your worldview. No one lives as if it's only opinion. You just watch someone cut someone off on a freeway. Watch the person who got cut off. Watch their reaction. They're not like, well, look at that. They're expressing their opinion. How beautiful. All right, moving on. I don't want to get you worked up about traffic. Here's the reality. Truth does exist and it can be known. Now, I'm going to model right now what I'm calling you to do today, and that is define terms. Whenever you're talking about truth and morality and these things, stop and define terms, because what I think I may mean by a word may not be what you think you may mean. But we go to the same church. Paul's calling out false religion in his church that he planted. So define terms. What do I mean by truth? Here it is. Ready? One definition I love is this. That which corresponds to reality. Now that's kind of a mouthful. Here's what the guy said the other night, which I like. Telling it like it is. Truth is telling it like it is. Doesn't matter how you feel. Doesn't matter if you wonder, if you think. There are things that are just true. So that which corresponds to reality. Here's what Paul is doing in this letter. And specifically in this passage, he is making a truth statement, a truth claim. And every truth claim that is made demands that you use discernment. Because a truth claim made doesn't mean it's true. You all ought to be sitting here right now saying, wait a minute, that is a truth claim. You're right. Use discernment. Use discernment. Am I speaking the truth or am I not speaking the truth? Every truth claim demands discernment. And he's calling people out who are teaching lies. He compares them to the serpent tempting Eve in Genesis. He's sounding the alarm that The Jesus gospel and spirit that they teach are different. If something's different than the truth, it's called a lie. So he's saying these are not the real Jesus spirit and gospel. And what we're going to get to at the end of the text is this. He calls them servants of Satan. They are disguised as light, but they're actually dark. He does not mince words. Here's the sad part. Sad part of verse 4 is you put up with it readily enough. Paul has tried to model again and again and again. We went through this last week. He's just a giver. He's sacrificially leading them to the truth over and over and over. They're going by the well of living water to broken cisterns, broken wells that have nothing to offer. There's no life in that. And they literally have to walk past the good well to get to the bad well. And they just keep doing that over and over and over. They put up with it readily enough. Do you see why the father of the bride is jealous and afraid? It's in a godly way. It's for them. One of the flavors of putting up with different has been termed deconstructing. Raise your hand if you've heard of the term deconstruction or have heard of that in some setting. Okay, a lot of you. So I'm not gonna go a bunch into it, but I am gonna define terms. Daughters in the faith, and meaning the church as bride of Christ, men and women, have readily put up with different, with brand new teaching that dismantles what they have been handed. And here's what's happening to many people. They are being robbed blind. I'm talking about like selling your birthright for a bowl of soup kind of stuff here. Like really trading in everything that's good and golden and helpful and long-term investment and just being handed nothing in return. The main vehicle for this is smooth speech. And that's the next thing I want to talk about. Discern or be duped by speech. Look at verse 5. Indeed, I consider that I am not in the least inferior to these super apostles. He's using that really sarcastically, by the way. Even if I am unskilled in speaking, I am not so in knowledge. Indeed, in every way, we have made this plain to you in all things. Do not be duped by smooth speech. Think. Learn to discern. Now, some of the objection might be this. Can't deconstruction be good? Again, if anyone comes and says that to me, hey, pastor, can't deconstruction be good? I'd say, maybe, define what you're talking about. What do you mean by that? Here's what may be helpful if by deconstruction you mean this. Maybe you're saying, I'm trying to sort out the traditions of men from the absolute doctrines that God has said are true for all of time. Because my church taught the traditions of men as absolute bedrock truth, and I'm realizing there's some difference. I think that could be good. How about this? Learning to think for myself and not just swallowing everything that was handed to me by my parents, by my Christian school, by my church, by others. That could be good. Here's one more. Separating fallen creatures who proclaim the true gospel from the true gospel and the Savior. That could be good. Here's what I would say. Everything I just said, by the way, falls under the idea of discernment. So let me tell you right now, do that right now while I am speaking. So that if someone comes to you next week and says, oh, you're just a 14-year-old, you're just swallowing everything being handed to you. You don't know you're being blinded. And you could say, at my church, we're actually invited to use discernment and look at it and say, is that true? So that incrementally, week by week, month by month, year by year, your ability to discern has been honed in practice. And if you can see it physically, it's like you're ripped when it comes to discerning truth by the time you get into college. If you've not been doing that, and then you're smacked with smooth speech, man, someone who's good at this and practiced at this, they can sit there and just pull apart everything and say, see, everything you believe is a house of cards. Let me show you. Now, deconstruction that simply seeks to destroy your biblical worldview with smooth speech is bad. Here's the interesting thing. What's the replacement being offered? Remember I said a couple of weeks ago, it's easier to complain and tear something down than to start and actually build something? This is happening all the time with people in the faith. If no replacement is offered, duh, that's dumb. Now, my daughter Cassie is serving in children's ministry. This was written for Cassie, with Cassie in mind. But let's say my daughter Cassie had a friend come and just start ranting that all Japanese-made cars from the early 2000s are horrible and should be gotten rid of immediately. Because Japanese companies are greedy and evil. The plants smell like seaweed because they eat seaweed and it actually seeps into the engine parts. And it's destroying the planet. And Cassie is just like kind of getting worked up and going, yeah. And then this revolutionary friend realizes Cassie drives a 2000 Toyota Camry. And she whips Cassie into a frenzy and says, here's a sledgehammer, Cassie. Let's go. Let's stick it to the man. So they dismantle every part of this 2000 Camry. And they're exhausted, but they feel really good. Because they've stood their ground on truth. And they've stuck it to the man. And then Cassie asks the all-important question, now what? And you know what the revolutionary friend says between deep breaths, because they're catching their breath? The answer is this, you walk. That's the reality. You don't have a car anymore. You get to walk now. You get to learn all about public transportation. You get to borrow your friends' cars. That's what. People are dismantling the thing they own for no replacement. And they realize after the fact, there is no good replacement. I just dismantled the thing I own. There are some people who have oxidized paint and bald tires on their Porsche, and they are trading in that car for a little toy Hot Wheel. Soup in place of a birthright. They're being robbed wholesale. If people do offer you a whole new worldview, new vehicles to replace your broken down Camry, ask the questions ahead of time. Is this true? I love how Frank Turek says, he's an apologist, he has a great podcast. He says this, doubt your doubts. When a doubt creeps up, did God really say, doesn't that sound like Satan, by the way, in Genesis? Doesn't that sound like the serpent deceiving Eve? Did God really say, doubt the question itself? Yeah, he did say, get out of here. Here's the last one. Discern or be duped by actions. You don't want to be duped. Paul is using an event that's well known here, and it's this. He is not taking payment from the Corinthian church, and he's teaching them free of charge. And he's doing it for a very specific reason, which he will tell us. And he's using this known event to expose the hypocrisy of his opponents. Verse 7. Again, tongue in cheek here a little bit. So you have to read in. These are some zingers that Paul's saying. He says, or did I commit a sin in humbling myself so that you might be exalted? That's Christ-like leadership, by the way. Humble yourself to lift others up. Authority is given to build up, not to tear down. Because I preached God's gospel to you free of charge. Verse 8, I robbed other churches by accepting support from them in order to serve you. And when I was with you and was in need, I did not burden anyone, for the brothers who came from Macedonia supplied my need. Catch this. So I refrained and will refrain from burdening you in any way. Verse 10, as the truth of Christ is in me, truth claim, here it is, check it out, look at my actions. This boasting of mine will not be silenced in the regions of Achaia. Why? Because I do not love you. God knows I do. And what I am doing, I will continue to do. Do you hear the actions? It's not just words being spouted. What I am doing, look at my actions, I will continue to do. Why? In order to undermine the claim of those who would like to claim that in their boasted mission, they work on the same terms as we do. Here's the point. Fakers pride themselves in how much they can get for a speech. This is still true. Someone pulling down $10,000 to show up for a speech must be a really big deal. What was happening is traveling itinerant preachers were comparing and competing over how much money they could pull down. Does this sound shockingly horrible to be going on in the church? Yes! Meanwhile, servants like Paul forfeited his right to receive financial support. Does Paul have the right to demand financial support? Yes, he does. But he says, you know what? I'm going to forego that. Why? So that there could be no accusation that this act of love is being done in love and not for financial profit. So it's not wrong to be supported in ministry by those benefiting. NBC has this model. I am one of three full-time pastors directors here. And I work all week long as a pastor, not at a outside the church job, being supported by other people. That's the model. It's also, though, not wrong to have other people supporting ministry going on to some region of people. Let me just say this. For 14 years, two homeowners in the Bay Area provided rent that was significantly below market value so that Ben Palm, who was here for 12 years with us, and myself could live at a very reduced rate, and then there's more money available for NBC Ministry and other programs to go on. 14 years. Here's what's interesting. After a few of those years, my landlord moved up to the Pacific Northwest. And I would just tell him, do you know that when I don't really write a check, but when I send my check through Bill Pay, I would tell him and his wife, I'd say, I think of the book of Acts, where one region of people was sacrificially giving, even though they could have made much more, so they could support the ministry of people they didn't even know. So these ministry couples, the other one for Ben, by the way, was from a different church. Other churches supporting the ministry going on. So it's okay to receive funds for staff here. It's also okay for others to do. It's also okay, Paul says, to not charge anything at all. And that's what he's getting at. Here's the reality. Servants of Satan and Satan himself will always twist a good, humble, loving act into something wrong. Romans chapter 1 says this, people's minds get so darkened that the most obvious act of good is twisted into, there's got to be something wrong with this, and twisted and flipped completely upside down. That's what's going on here. So how about you and me? How can we tell if we should listen to someone? How can we tell if we should follow someone's leadership? In some ways, it's as simple as this. Check the fruit. Check the fruit. That's what actions is talking about. But it's not just actions, it's words. Do the words and actions line up? Is what they're saying true? You don't just put all fruit in your mouth. Anyone love summer fruit like I do? Man, I mean, summer just has some of the best fruit, right? And when you have a bowl of cherries or a bunch of peaches or strawberries or whatever other fruit you may love, you are looking at that fruit and going, I want that one. And when you pick it up, you're gonna take it. Anyone of you guys at Costco, like you're trying to look through the basket of strawberries and making sure there's not like bad ones on the bottom? I am that guy. I'm sitting here, I'm trying to look at every little thing going, I want a good basket because we're going to need all this fruit. We look at the fruit, we inspect it, we check to see if we like it. We don't just take it in, and we should do the same with teachers. Here's the big idea. Don't ingest until you investigate. How do you check the fruit? Well, here's one thing. If you want to grow in financial training, don't take financial training from someone in debt and someone who has just a mess with their money. Don't do it. If you want to learn about parenting and you see their kids are in total chaos, do not take in parenting tips from someone whose house is not in order. How about marriage from someone with a poor marriage? How about a self-proclaimed Jesus follower that isn't actually listening to Jesus? Just that's basic. That's like mold on the outside of the fruit. Do not ingest that. Look at it ahead of time. Don't go, and then say, it tastes off a little bit. Yeah. This is actually why the local church is so incredibly vital. There's a celebrity culture that's crept into the church. It's been here for a long time. That's what Paul's talking about, actually. And the celebrity culture fosters cover-up. It fosters fakes. You can't fake it with in-person church forever. You can for a season. Here's my challenge to you. If you are in a community group, your community group leader is tasked by the elders of the church. Elders are under-shepherds of the chief shepherd. Who's the lead pastor of NBC? It's Jesus. I'm an under-shepherd. And under-shepherds are tasked to task other under-shepherds to say, hey, open your home and shepherd these people. So when your community group leader is leading through a season, don't just listen to his words, watch his attitude on things. What's coming out of those kinds of things? How about a pastor and his wife? Pastors and their wives can be great actors. But over time, you can't fake it forever. Here's what I would say with couples. Learn to read their body language. It's much harder to fake body language. It's much harder to fake facial expressions that look like one thing, but you can tell something else is going on. So look at that. That's how you're checking the fruit. Right now, you ought to be going, checking this guy out, going, is this guy just a skilled guy? Did he work on that? Like, what's happening here? Here's what's interesting. When God gifts you a child, man, that is going to reveal all kinds of imperfections and selfishness and desperate need for God to do more sanctifying work in your life. Sometimes husbands and wives can hold it together, and their kids tell a completely different story. Just check the fruit. Paul says, follow me as I follow Christ. Look at what I'm doing. Look at how I'm living. Check the fruit and come after me. Let's go. Christian homes, if you think about it, Christian homes, Christian marriages, Christian workers, they are to be a light on the hill. They are to be this thing that's so shining bright that the darkened world says, I want what you're selling. What is that? And you go, you can have it. Let me introduce you to Jesus. It's all his work. I didn't come up with any of this. I'm just walking this faithfully, and you can too. Let me show you. Here's the question, Christian, for myself. Is that going on? That's being ready to give an answer because we're following the Lord. I said this earlier that not all deception is dark. Some of it sounds pretty great, in fact. Super compassionate, super wise. Listen to Jesus on this in John chapter 3. Right after John 3:16, one of the most famous verses in all the Bible, he says this, and this is the judgment. The light has come into the world and the people love the darkness rather than the light because their works were evil. I said this last week, Jesus absolutely annoys fake people. Fake teachers hate Jesus because he exposes them. That's how we ought to be too. Don't go around being annoying. That's not what I'm saying. But as a Christian, you will annoy fake people. He goes on to say this in verse 20, for everyone who does wicked things hates the light and does not come to the light, lest his works should be exposed. There it is. But whoever does what is true comes to the light so that it may be clearly seen. Listen to this, that his works have been carried out in God. Walk in the light. If you are covering up, you're hiding something. That's fear. What was the feeble fashion of Adam and Eve? Let's hide from God by making some clothes for us. We do the same sorts of things when we hide. Here's the conclusion or verdict, if you will, in verse 13. Here's what Paul says. For such men are false apostles. Here's what he's been driving at. Deceitful workmen, disguising themselves as apostles of Christ. And no wonder, for even Satan disguises himself as an angel of light. So it is no surprise if his servants also disguise themselves as servants of righteousness. Listen to this. Their end will correspond to their deeds. Man, our words matter. Our actions matter. 2 Timothy shows two kinds of people. There's evil people, and hopefully there's you. Look at it. 2 Corinthians. While evil people and imposters will go on from bad to worse, deceiving and being deceived. But as for you, continue in what you have learned and have firmly believed, knowing from whom you learned it. The opposite of putting up readily enough with false ideas is to simply continue. Stay walking the aisle toward Christ. Don't run away when it's time to say the vows. Remember from who you heard this from. You know where this is hard to do is if your pastor lives online somewhere or your pastor changes with the season. I liked this teacher for a while, but they got off, and so I went over here. You know what that often means? They countered something that I was doing. I didn't like that message, so I went on to someone else. This is face-to-face embodied church gatherings. I told you I'd give you three things at the end. Here's the three things at the end. When it comes to digital screen time and you ought to be discerning. You already are discerning. Let me offer some help. Because who you are listening to, who you are following, who you are hurting is, in fact, influencing you. It's really hard to check the fruit of online people, isn't it? You can check their teaching. Like, over time, you can get a sense. There are people I've taught, I'm like, oh, I really like that. And I've listened to a few more, I'm like, oh, I don't like the attitude, the undercurrent of that. I'm going to turn that one off. But I really have no idea where this person even lives or what his actual life is like. So here's what you could do. You could abandon all online content because you cannot check their fruit in a reasonable way. You could. But here's the thing. We are living in this like golden age of communication. We have helps from all over the place coming in right now. How about if we just be discerning and like lean on these incredible resources and learn to inspect before we ingest it? You also could check out right now and say, oh, this old guy, like he just hates social media and all that. I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing. You could do that. But even that, I would say, check the fruit. There's some people, it used to be radio, like political radio or sports radio. And people would like get to work all worked up about politics or sports that they have no control of. Let me tell you right now, if your favorite team is the Minnesota Vikings, you have no say in who is starting the season at quarterback. Zero. So if you are getting to work like a jittery mess over who they're starting, that's dumb. I'll just name it. Now there's sports and political radio on absolute steroids. So what's the fruit being produced in you? Ed Stetzer, in this book, Christians in the Age of Outrage, offers some really, really helpful advice. And here's what I want to pass it on to you. So this is his ideas. I just loved it. Number one is this. Is my social media engagement investing or consuming? Hear me really clearly. Consuming is not bad. I'm not against consuming. But we ought to be able to identify it. How many plan to watch the World Cup in a little bit of time? Anyone? Okay, a handful. Real football is coming in the fall. So if your team's out, be okay with it. That's consuming, and that's okay. I plan on consuming today, okay? But we ought to be able to name it and look at it. Is this consuming or investing? Many times we're just spending way too much following others unwisely. There's a real thing called FOMO. We just go like, everyone else is doing this. I guess I want to get in on what's going on with that. Sometimes we keep following someone because we don't want the awkwardness of like unfollowing them if it's a person we know. Be discerning, be wise with what it's doing. Here's the second thing. What are you getting out of each person who's influencing you? It really is an apt name to say they're influencers. What are you getting from it? Is it a good trade? You getting a little Hot Wheel car or are you getting something better? Here's three positive examples of what I would say if you are following these kinds of people, you're doing something good. Here's number one. If you're following people with whom you regularly engage with, family or friends who live far away or who are close by and you want to stay connected with. If you are doing that and they are not leading you astray or leading you into temptation or leading you into sin, keep following them. You are investing in real world connections. We have less and less of those. Good job. Here's the second one. If you're following leaders who teach you about God, his word, or how to engage with world events from a gospel point of view, you are investing in your walk with Christ. You're seeking out wisdom. Keep doing that. That's great. Here's a third and final one. If you are following people from outside your tradition or outside your community who challenge you to consider your blind spots, you are investing in your ability to understand and engage others. I do this all the time. I have conversations with real people who think very differently from me, and I can have conversations with all kinds of people who are outside of my tradition, my upbringing, my location, and have digital conversations with them. Each of these requires discernment, but each of these is a positive way to say, yeah, I'm going to keep following them because I'm investing in something, not just consuming it. Ben, would you come on up? We're about to move into a time of communion. And I want to close with this passage. This passage is so beautifully brings together discernment and fruit. Okay, this whole idea of before you eat any more fruit this week, as you go to pick that thing up, you don't just blindly grab any of them and put it in your mouth. That melon looks a little mushy. I'm going to leave that one for my kids. We're all kind of selfish with fruit. I want that cherry, right? I did this yesterday with cherries. I was looking for the best ones. I want to eat good cherries. So as you investigate before you ingest, maybe think of this passage, Philippians 1:9. So beautiful. And it is my prayer that your love may abound more and more with knowledge and all discernment, so that you may approve what is excellent, and so be pure and blameless for the day of Christ, filled with the fruit of righteousness that comes through Jesus Christ to the glory and praise of God. Man, sit with that verse this week. Lord, we want to walk in the light. We want to step into the light. And anything good and pure and knowledgeable and discerning is from you. We don't want any of the glory that is yours. God, we reflect it to you. We say the reason that this fruit is in my life is solely because of the Lord. God, if we're discerning, we see, we say the only source of that kind of love, that kind of sacrifice, that kind of wisdom, that kind of compassion, that kind of consistency, that kind of meekness, the only source of that has to be from God. Lord, I love that I look out right now this morning. I am filled to the brim with testimonies of people living. I see the fruit of their life, and it's evident that they are yours. God, thank you for this morning. Amen.